All right. Well, it's a little loud, but thank you for coming. I appreciate it. My name is Eric Mattingly. I'm a service engineer in Microsoft IT. Specifically, I work in the volume licensing space. So all the systems that you may use with volume licensing at Microsoft are systems that I support as a support engineer. And we're looking at today preparing to support enterprise applications on Windows Azure. A lot of this comes from my background of supporting Windows Azure enterprise applications we have in Microsoft IT. Microsoft IT, you know, has almost kind of a mandate to dog food all the latest technologies that the company is coming up with, all the product groups come up with, so we can provide that great feedback to them on what's working, what doesn't work. And usually if it works for Microsoft IT, it'll work for a lot of customers as well because we're a very large shop. You know, I'm going to joke around a little bit, you know, it's Friday afternoon, so have a little fun with my friend Business Cat. I got one other guy who's going to help once in a while. And, you know, this session, we're talking about supporting Azure right now. So applications you might have, you know, there's a lot of great technologies that are just, you know, been released this week. You know, a lot of that stuff still release preview, right, and it's still not production supported. So we're going to be focusing on what, you know, if this is your boss, maybe this is you, you want to put something on Azure right now, you know, what do you have to do to make that a supportable solution? What's kind of different? Those are the questions, you know, what, let's go right from the beginning, you know, how am I building and how am I going to deploy this supportable Azure app? You have to do some things up front where you maybe didn't have to do it in an on-premise world, so we'll talk about that. How's troubleshooting different? A lot of things are kind of the same. A lot of the tools you know and love you can still use, but there's minor tweaks on, you know, what you can do and some extra tools that, you know, I want to expose you guys to in supporting Azure apps. And then the last thing is, you know, you're running on this shared platform now. You're running on Microsoft infrastructure. At what point is that line that it's not your app? It's, you know, maybe something's going on in the data center. You know, how do you figure out when do I call Azure support, Microsoft support, you know, to see is this me or is this the data center? So we'll talk a little bit about that. And all, like I said, all this is kind of pulling from my experiences. So the first section, designing the supportable Azure applications. I said we're going to go through really all the parts of designing this app, whether it's a migration or a V1, we'll talk about it. And my role, being in the support org, we actually have what are called SDEs, a service design engineer. And what we do is we work with engineering to specifically make sure what they develop, what they deliver to us in production is stuff that we can use. It adheres to our best practices, and it's supportable, right? It's not just something thrown over the wall to us that we now have to deal with. So in the design, you know, we talked about lots of great stuff's been released. Well, most of that stuff's still released preview, right? So when you're designing, platform as a service is the way to go to have a production-supportable Azure application. And, you know, whether it's V1 or migration, you know, there's trade-offs. There's a couple different technologies that have do sort of the same thing. You can do it a little bit different. Great example of SQL Azure versus Azure Storage. Both can be used to store data, retrieve data. You know, there's subtle differences, and depending on what your requirements are. So some good examples is, you know, SQL Azure currently doesn't have a performance SLA around it. And the more, you know, if you're doing a lot of transactional stuff, heavy transactional, maybe you want to be using Azure Storage for that. That does have SLAs around how many transactions are going in and out. There's examples of how much data are you talking about, right? Right now, I think it's set for 150 for SQL Azure. We upped it recently. So if you have to deal with more data than that, you're going to want to look at Azure Storage. And with Azure Storage, you only have for table storage, which I'm comparing to SQL Azure here, row key, partition key, and that's the columns that are indexed. So it's a lot more difficult to search on any of these other columns as part of Azure Storage. And if you have apps that you need to be able to, you know, search these other columns using where clauses, what have you, SQL Azure might be the answer for that. The service bus This is talking about the hybrid. So say you have on-premise, for example, the app I worked on, we have an on-premise SAP instance in Microsoft, and we needed to talk back to that because it was a licensing app. And we had a decision to make. Yeah, there's a couple of technologies I don't have listed here. Azure Connect, that's a beta, it's a CTP, so we didn't want to use that. Virtual Network was released this week. That's also preview, so it's not production supported right now. So we looked at Service Bus Relay, which allows us to connect it in a way, and also the public web services. We ended up settling on just Service Bus Relay, so we don't have to expose anything from on-premise that way. Expose these web services to the public, and we had a lot finer control over the throttling in Service Bus, and seeing how much is going across. This is, there's not going to be a ton of these, so it's just a little in the heavy. I just read about data sync, sounds perfect. Like I said, no CTP or release preview. If we're talking about an enterprise app that you need to have stay up, you need to have SLAs, right? You got to stick with the production supported stuff right now. It's very exciting, a lot of the stuff coming down the pipe. Got to stick with production support. And I have a link at the bottom, so if you it talks about what is currently production supported, what currently does have SLAs. We're not talking too much into the development of Azure apps, but there's some points that I think are very applicable to the support world. And the biggest thing is understanding that there's transient faults that happen in the platform as a service world. You can be connecting to SQL Azure, connecting to Service Bus storage, and you might have to have retry logic to make sure that connection stays there, make sure that you actually run the query and you get something back. For a while, there was nothing. People had to roll their own. Thankfully, the Patterns and Practices group released this transient fault handling application block. And that'll do all of this great stuff for you. So it'll do these resilient connections to SQL Azure, resilient to Service Bus, resilient to Azure Storage. Very easy to use. And from a support world, it's you don't want it to be a headache. One real life example of this is we had workflows in our application, and because we weren't using these resilient connection points, our workflows just kind of got wonky, right? And things were kind of falling in weird spots, and it was very hard to troubleshoot, and it was really just blips in the system, which is expected. That's how Windows Azure is developed. So that it's something to know. And understanding the paradigm shifts, mostly for migrating apps. Suddenly you're in a multi-instance world. You have to have two instances to guarantee your SLA of 99.95. Those instances need to be stateless, and they need to tolerate failures, right? If anybody has gone to Mark Rasanovich's the Windows internal sessions that he's done, he talks about it's commodity hardware in there, right? And the fabric controller owns figuring out the health of systems and making sure that you always have two instances running. But that means your app needs to be resilient to the fact that the server it's running on the VM can fail at any time. And you don't want that to cause workflow style issues or to affect your end users. Looking at the instrumentation, the great thing about Windows Azure is instrumentation is pretty much the same as on-premise. And I call it sticking to the basics, right? If you're using NT events, things you'll look and see in the event viewer, .NET trace, custom performance counters, all that stuff is still going to work great in Windows Azure, and we'll look a little bit at how that works and discuss how you can configure these things. Early in your pre-production environments, you can use IntelliTrace, which is a great way to understand what's going on. That's not supported in production. So I'm just highlighting again another, making sure that you have a production support. If you have to call Microsoft support, they'll work with you. Windows Azure Diagnostics. So how many people here know anything about Windows Azure Diagnostics, have used it before, have configured it? Is anybody? Only a handful. So how this works is you have these instances, right, running in Azure, and we talked about how they can fail at any time. Well, because of that, there's a process, a system called Windows Azure Diagnostics, which will transfer the diagnostics data you need to Azure Storage. And it'll transfer at a configured interval, It'll transfer what you want, and we'll look at a demo of configuring what you would transfer. And you know, from WAD, it's called WAD, and for Windows Azure Diagnostics. And depending on what you pull, if it's IIS logs, it'll go into blob storage. So it'll be like the IIS logs that you know and love from on-premise. And things like performance counters will go into table storage. There's a few different ways you can consume them, and we'll look at one of the best ones for the enterprise, which is System Center Operations Manager. A little note at the bottom, when you start to develop your Azure deployments, you can select if it's going to run in full trust or if it's going to run in partial trust. For diagnostics to work correctly, it has to be set to full trust. We talked earlier about these resilient points, right? These connection points. Well, you also, in an on-premise world, if you're using SQL, you have your SQL events, right? You can look on the SQL box and understand what was going on. You have service bus. You can look on these on-premise boxes to figure out what's going on. Now in Azure, these are services that are abstracted away from you. And it's really the dev's responsibility to write out exactly what errors that they saw. A great example of SQL Azure. If you have issues connecting to SQL Azure, and we'll go into what some of those issues may be, they'll return a specific error code to you. And with that error code, you can figure out using MSDN documentation exactly what's going on. Why am I unable to connect to SQL Azure? So it's very important that when you're connecting to any of these services or any other services that ship as part of the platform as a service, that the developers really write in that logic and instrument it very well. So setting instrumentation, there's a bunch of different ways that you can set this WAD, this Windows Azure Diagnostics, to transfer to Azure Storage. The best practice we've found is to use what's known as the configuration file, which is an XML file that you deploy as part of your code. And the one caveat to this is if you do custom performance counters, you're going to have to do that in your code itself. So when you're running an Azure role, there is an onStart function that runs as part of the instance startup, and you can also configure your diagnostics there. And if you have custom perf counters, you'll have to do it there. But for the rest, we recommend using a configuration file. So let's actually bounce over to this demo machine and look at what does this configuration file consist of and some best practices with this. So here I have a web role solution, and I'll scroll this up. And all I did was added, I just created a new web role, nothing fancy. And what I did was I added this file to the root, which is called diagnostics.wad.cfg. So it's a very specific file that the fabric's going to look for when this role instance starts, and it's going to configure your monitoring, or excuse me, your diagnostics based on what's contained in this file. So in this file, if we'll kind of run through the components of it, is where you configure for each of those objects that you can pull back, how often you're pulling back and how much space are you allocating to pull it back. So you have a configuration change. So if you change this file at all, it'll pick it up and you can configure that. So here I have it configured for every 1 minute, look for a configuration change for your diagnostics, because you can change it real time at any point if you want to. And there's overall quota, so how much space am I giving to the diagnostics? And this refers to the space on the VM itself. And I'm going to refer to an Azure VM throughout this talk. And what I really mean is a compute role, so a web role, worker role, whatever. In the end, it's a VM, so I'm going to refer to it as an Azure VM. It does not mean VM role specifically. It doesn't mean the virtual machine that was announced this week. And just going through, I have directories, I can pull the crash dumps, so I have crash dumps configured, I have failed request logs from IIS configured, I have the IIS logs specifically configured to make sure that they're all pulled and they're going to get pulled every 1 minute. The pulling of it, transferring it over to storage, there is a cost incurred with the transferring, and it's up to really the support person to figure out what's that sweet spot, right? If you do it very often, 1 minute's kind of the minimum you can do it. If your role crashes for one reason, it's the question of how much data are you going to lose for troubleshooting, right? If you're only transferring it every 10 minutes and your role crashes, you might have lost 10 minutes of data leading up to it, and it would be very difficult possibly to figure out, what went on, what's going on with that system. But then you can always then change the configuration a little bit, drive that up, and transfer it a lot more often. So I always recommend when you first initially have an Azure deployment, your first app, keep it a little bit aggressive, as you get a feel for your app and get an understanding of how it's really working in production. And then you can start scaling it back once you really understand what the user load and how it's looking. My favorite part is the performance counter section. So here is where we list out all the counters that we want to be pulling. So just like normal perfmon counters, right? It's going to pull, it's going to store it into the table storage of Azure storage. And you can see we're pulling it every 5 minutes, every sample rate of 5 minutes for each counter. You can be more aggressive. We have that right now because there's a limitation in SCOM right now for the Azure Management Pack that you can't have more aggressive than 5 minutes. So we're just leaving it at 5 minutes for now. And you can see we kind of have the usual suspects. So we have requests per second, the number of current requests, how the disk is looking, memory, NIC, the process counter for specifically IIS, the W3WP, and then also the web services and the processor as well. And then finally, at the end, we also configure the event logs. Now, which event logs do we want? You can be very granular with this. So you can say, I want this specific event log, and I want it only warning or higher. And that'll transfer that to table storage as well. Now, how this works is when it gets deployed, you put it in a specific location. For a web role, you put it in the root. It gets deployed. This gets read, and I actually have, if you see on the left here, I have a Server Explorer. I'm still in Visual Studio. And this is my storage account right here, my Azure storage. So I have table storage and blob. So I can look under blob, and I have a VS deploy, which is where your package gets uploaded as part of the deployment of it to Azure. I have the control container, and actually inside here, if I double-click, this is where I have where the configuration eventually lands for the diagnostic. So it gets kind of translated into something that the Azure Fabric can understand. And we can look through that just at a glance, and you can see it's pretty much the exact same. It is the exact same data of what I told it to do, just in a different format. So this is a good way that you can verify that what you configured as diagnostics actually worked. And then we have WADIS here, and this is the IS logs. Like I said, the logs you all know and love. So if you already have processes where you use, say, log parser for on-premise servers, they'll still work great here. You just got to pull them down from the storage. And then under tables, we have all the other diagnostics. So we have infrastructure logs that Azure has. We have performance counters. So I'll double-click this, although it's probably going to take a little bit. And this is how the performance counters end up. You can see it's the instance name, the counter name, and the value over here on the right. So a little different way to look at it than perfmon. And like I said, there are tools you can use. Specifically, we're going to show SCOM here. And then the event logs table. So same thing, just the events that in this format, a little different way to look at it. One thing to be aware is I said a little earlier, I don't have any events, that's good. I said a little earlier that in Azure storage, only the partition key and row key sections, and if I go back to the performance counters, you'll see it over here, partition key, row key, they're the only ones indexed. So if you're dealing with something like events, it's very difficult just to search directly on WAD, because if you're searching, say, through your description, it's going to take a very long time because it's got to chug through each one on storage itself. So one of the things I found, and I'll talk about a little bit later, is pulling these on-premise or pulling them to SQL Azure, so having a process to move the events somewhere else just for viewing purposes. You can still alert on them through SCOM, and we'll look at that as well. So I'll ask, any questions on diagnostics? Pretty important part of it. Yep. Can you use the mic? Sorry about that.
Mentioned with the event logs that you can pull the event logs off the server. If you've written a custom event log, like for an existing application on premise, mm-hmm. can you deploy that event log to Azure?
Yes.
And you can write to it?
Yep, that's a great question. So you can create that event log as part of I'll have a little demo of something called startup tasks. And a startup task is stuff that runs before your instance starts up, and where you can do stuff like create perf counters, create event logs. So in that specific example, you would create the event log there in a startup task. And like I said, I have a little demo on that. And then in the configuration file, if I can go back to it here, let me try to find it again. You would just label it at the very bottom here, next to application. You would just add that log as well, and that would pull into the WAD storage. That was a good question. So that's an example. This is an example configuration for you. Like I said, there's a lot of different ways you can do diagnostics. We found this is the best way to do it, because you're not doing it inside code itself. You got it kind of abstracted out to a degree, and operations can then, you know, define what they want and then provide it to the dev team. Bounce back to the PowerPoint here. So it leads right in. That was a great lead into startup tasks. And this is used to configure the VM, like I said, VM referring to just an Azure instance. It's used to configure that VM before your code actually runs. So the most common use we've found so far is IIS settings. If you need to do stuff with, say, the app pool, you want to set specific settings there that your app needs. But like the question mentioned, you can also do things like create perf counters, create event logs, do all that right before that role starts. Another neat trick that we're going to show you is how to install software through it, too. So one thing which I'll do as part of this demo is you can TS remote desktop into an Azure VM, and you can install whatever you want on it. You can, you know, if there's certain tools that you know and love, for this example, we're going to look at debug Diag and just how I use that to install it on the role instance. You can still use those in Azure. There's nothing stopping you. So if you have an issue, you can still go onto the box itself and then copy the tools you want or do them with a startup task. And there's another way I'll talk about, and just use those tools directly and analyze and troubleshoot. So let's look again at how a startup task looks. And as I go to this, just to mention, we're doing, you know, I'm talking about this all as part of the development, right? Because this is very operational, right? The tools you need, configuring diagnostics, very operational. But it needs to be done up front. It needs to be done as part of the development. And we'll also talk, it needs to be tested, too. It needs to be tested that it's working correctly and it's working as expected. So for a startup task, what we have here is we have in the configuration, so let me pull up the configuration. So here in the definition file, you'll see we have this role, the web role I have created. It's the size of extra small. But there's a thing called a startup here. And this is where you define what you want to have run before. So here I'm saying the startup, I want to do this command line program, and I want it to be elevated so it runs with high privileges, and I want it to do in the background. This task type, you can change this. So depending on what you want, there's simple, foreground, background. Simple, well, foreground, background refers to the .NET process, how it spins up. The simple, however, means that it's going to actually block, and it's going to run this and ensure this runs and completes before it starts your roll-up. So if you have a lot of stuff, and if there are issues with it, if it's broken, it'll actually prevent your instances from spinning up correctly, which could be an issue. So depending on what it is, you have to decide if it's critical to the app or not. If you're creating event logs, creating perf counters, you would want that to be simple. For something like this, where I'm just showing how you can install a piece of software, background is fine, because if it doesn't install, it's actually not a huge deal, right? So we defined a startup in startup.cmd. So in my solution, I have a folder startup, and I just have two files. I just have the debug Diag 64-bit MSI, the installer itself. And then I have this startup CMD, and that one's pretty simple. All it's doing is it's running the MSI exec to install it, and then it's running the register.bat, which is something specific to debug Diag that needs to hook in when it does its job of dumping files. So how this works is the role gets, you know, you publish this to Azure. the role instance will spin up. It'll immediately start this startup task in the background, and this will run. And if we look now at our Azure role, I'm going to TS into my role here. So if you haven't seen this before, talking with you, sounds like a few of you aren't don't have anything running right now. So here I have a web role with two instances here. And if you see, we have remote access. We have connect up here, so we can TS into it, remote desktop into it. So I just save that file off for now so that I can connect without having to go through that. So here we connect, give it my password. Little tip from the field here. Don't check the don't ask me again for connections to this computer, because that name can potentially change, right? That role, it's RD Red Dog, the code name for Azure. This is the actual VM name, and that can change. And if it changes, remote desktop acts kind of funny. And it's not going to work. You kind of have to clear it out and redo it. So don't check that box if you do it this way. So as it's logging in here, go back to the demo. So one thing to mention is this, at least going back to the diagnostics, depending on what kind of role you have, this has to be located in a specific spot, and there's guidance on MSDN for that. So since this is a web role, it's just going in the root of it. All right, so here we are. So we're on the VM itself. This is the Azure VM. And if you notice, in this talk I'm not going into kind of how the VM is made up or any of that, but the installer ran, and where it ends up being installed to is the C drive. Did the installer run? Oh, this is the, excuse me. The demo gods were mean to me. So I got to go to a different subscription for this. And let me go up here. And let me connect. And here, so you can save this file off, this RDP file, or you can open it directly. So I'll just open it directly for now. Same thing. Yes, don't click the checkbox. And here we are. So I can get out of this. Don't care about that either. So you see on the C drive, what it did was it copied that file it needed the MSI. Now we have the folder debug diag here. And we can, of course, just run it if we want to run it. Oh, the registered. All right, so you run it. And there it's available for you. So you can do this with any kind of tools. An example is if you have group policies on premise that push specific tools. Sometimes people use WinDBG; it'll push it specifically to servers. You can do this. Another thing I want to highlight, though, is there's another way you can get to tools. You can just download them straight while you're on the VM. And a pattern that some people use, which is also a very good pattern, is you can have the tool stored in Azure Storage. So specifically the blob storage. And then you can write maybe a little program that you can run from the instance itself to download those programs directly to the instance. So a couple different ways to slice and dice what you want to do. I wanted to highlight the startup tasks for configuring and also just installing this one piece. So that's why I went with this one for the demo. So any questions on startup tasks? How they're used from the support standpoint? All right, let me kick back over to the PowerPoint. I got my friend Velociraptor here. So Velociraptor, if prod and pre-prod are hosted in Azure, what's the difference? All right. And I'm highlighting something that a lot of times companies don't have. In my group, we don't have this, which is a pre-prod environment that looks exactly like production. Right, it's very cool. It's usually very expensive to do that. But when you have a pre-prod that looks exactly like production, you can do load testing and generate actual numbers for what you might see in production. Right? A great example is usually you have a great SAN in production, and you maybe have just direct attached storage in pre-prod. Right? You don't have that in Azure. So we really got on our test teams to do true load testing to really understand what's going on when we ramp up that load, because we're running basically in production, right? When you're doing load testing, you can be running next to, if you deploy your own app, you could be running right next to my production website right now, right? So I think it's very cool. You know, you can detect your bottlenecks. We're going to talk a little bit about the instances, so you can figure out what kind of instance sizes you want, because there's a lot of different choices. And another patterns and practices plug here, they have what's called an auto-scaling block. So one of the great things about the cloud is you can scale it out dynamically, right? Well, using this block, you can define rules around perf counters, and it'll scale it out for you. So you can say, hey, if CPU hits 80%, spin up another instance. So you know, you got to figure out what those rules are first. Where's that bottleneck going to be? Load testing is the best way. And load testing is built into the Visual Studio 2010 product. So if you have that, you can do the web and load test. This refers kind of to hybrids specifically, but it's good for an all Azure app as well. And that's that network latency is really going to affect things. And it's a little bit of a different paradigm shift here. We were talking to an on-premise SAP instance in our app specifically. You know, that was an SAP instance before we moved to the cloud that was sitting next to our web servers. It was sitting next to our SQL servers. We're talking 1 millisecond of latency in the same data center, right? Now that we've moved those front ends and that business logic over to the North Central data center, we're still talking back to Redmond through SAP, right? That's 50 milliseconds of latency that we suddenly introduced in the system. Thankfully, we had some very good data, low data transfer, so we weren't affected that much by it. But one of the tools that Microsoft IT uses, which is a tool where people do performance reviews, they're case studies, public case studies about these two tools. They were transferring just ungodly amounts of data between SQL and their front ends. And they left SQL on-premise back in Redmond and had their front ends in North Central. And they actually had to redesign their app to a degree to get around this latency issue. So it's very important to know this early on. It's very important to test for this, of what that effect is going to be on your application. And I link to a little site that will tell you the latency between the data centers. So if you decide to put things in different data centers, you can understand what that latency is going to be. Also with tests, we talked about it. Yeah, the instrumentation, that file, that diagnostics file, if it's not configured correctly, you can have serious issues starting that role, having that application work correctly. Maybe you're not even getting the diagnostics. If you're lucky, you'll just not get the diagnostics. If you're not lucky, it'll just not work, and your roles won't even start. So that's something that needs to be tested as well, just making sure this diagnostic file works, and that it's transferring what you're expecting it to transfer, right? And also, not only that, these failure modes. So we talked about it's a shared service. You might have transient faults. Well, what happens if you have an issue connecting off of that Azure instance all of a sudden, right? You need to test that, and not just test to make sure the app works, but also test to make sure that the eventing, the instrumentation you put in, you know, throws the errors that you expect, right? Is throwing that event you expect, and then if you have, say, System Center Operations Manager hooked up, that you're getting an alert through that. That should all be done in the pre-prod before you hit production. And it's, you know, I would say something you should be doing with on-premise systems anyway, but it's that much more important now that you're in a shared platform, a platform as a service model. I link here to some general steps. So there's a great list of investigating why your diagnostics might not be working as expected. So it's kind of a common thing, I would say, when you're first doing it. And there's some great resources online on this. Now we're going to move into the deployment. So now you tested your app, you did all this, you're ready to deploy it. A lot of different instance sizes. This is a link from MSDN, so you can find this data on MSDN. But understanding, you know, what do I need, right? The load testing should help you with that, help you understand how many instances and what size. And big thing is we found the bandwidth was a big part of it. The bandwidth dictated what size instances we need for our applications. And we have some best practices around this. So one of the best practices is to choose more instances at the smallest size that you can get away with. And the reason behind this is the larger the instance that you choose, it has more cores, right? And when the Fabric controller has to spin up instances of it, it needs to actually find a spot for those cores. So if we go back, we look at the extra large, you have 8 CPU cores. That means the Fabric needs to find a spot with 8 CPU cores that it can sit on. And sometimes that can take a long time. There have been customers that have spun up low thousands of instances. So we're not talking enterprise app, but this is an example. And it took days for it to spin up all the instances because it needed to find a spot for all of them, right? Another thing is the upgrade domain. So there's two different types of domains in Azure. There's fault domains and upgrade domains. A fault domain is physically things that are on kind of a different rack, and you don't control that. And that's if hardware failure occurs, you're not impacted. So you do not control fault domain. The upgrade domain, however, you do control, and that's what Azure uses to figure out how to upgrade when you're upgrading your deployment. So if you, say, put each instance into a different upgrade domain, say 5, which is the default, so you have 5 instances and 5 is the default number of upgrade domains, it'll actually update one instance at a time. If you have 10 instances and leave it at 5 update domains, it will do 2 at a time because you have 2 instances per upgrade domain, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And we found that the more upgrade domains you use, the longer upgrade times are going to take, right? Because it's got to go through these chunks. So you need to figure out there's kind of a sweet spot for your application and what you want to use. Separate storage account for diagnostics. If you're actually using Azure Storage in your application, you want to pull the diagnostics away and have that in a totally separate, not subscription, but just a separate storage account itself. And that's for, you don't want the transactions to potentially impact the transactions that your application is doing. And it's a lot easier to manage as well. So you can then share that key. You can share the secrets to support, to developers, to get to the diagnostic storage account. And you're not giving them access to maybe your production data. So it's a good best practice. And I showed you the remote desktop. You actually have to enable that, and you can enable that on the portal, or you can also enable it as part of the deployment. So our best practice is enable it as part of the deployment, so you just have it there and ready. And when it's deployed to production, you can remote desktop whenever you need to be able to. Now looking at sustain. So now it's in production. Where we go from here? So, I am hitting on some of the Azure points kind of at a little bit of a high level. So if you have any questions on this stuff, feel free to ask. The guest OS updates. So this is the update, kind of almost the patching that happens on your VM itself. And you can decide to have that done automatically as part of a manual process and set it specifically. And this is something you would want to just decide for yourself. So if you set it specifically, that means as every time that a new OS update, guest OS update happens, maybe you want to test all those patches to make sure it doesn't affect your app, and you can do that in a pre-prod environment. And then in your production environment, you can use the portal to switch and then apply that new OS update. Or you can just do it auto, and it'll do it by itself, and it'll adhere to those upgrade domains so that you won't have any downtime. It'll just update your role instances as it goes. So, upgrading deployment, there's a couple different ways that you can upgrade. So now that you have your V1.1 version of the app, you can do it in place, which means that you upload the package, and it uses these upgrade domains to flash, the number of instances at a time. You can do what's called a VIP swap. So if you've ever looked in the portal, there's 2 slots for your deployment. There's a pre-production, what's called a staging slot, and a production slot. If you have your new version uploaded to your staging slot and you have your production sitting in the production slot, you can hit just one button. It'll tell the load balancer to swap it, and now suddenly your staging's production, your production's staging. And you did a quick update right there. And that's good if you want to test this in a staging slot. You have the ability to test it like that. That's a good way to do it. And then finally, a redeploy, which means you're actually deleting the deployment and doing a redeploy, which means you will have downtime. And the choice really depends on what you're changing, what kind of changes you're making as part of the deployment. If it's just strictly code, You can almost always get away with an in-place or a VIP swap if you want to do a VIP swap. If you're changing stuff like endpoints, you have a new web service that has a totally different endpoint, that type of thing, since it's an aggressive change, you have to do a redeployment, which means a delete and a redeploy. So talking about backup here for the support, and this is something you should think about when you're making choices. So when you're doing backup for Azure Storage, there's tools available for backing up the data in Azure Storage, or you can write your own tools, but it's something to be aware of, right? If you need to do data redundancy, there is redundancy done in the cloud itself, redundancy both locally and geo-redundant, right? But if you want that on-premise, if you want your own redundancy, you're going to have to use something to do that. That's not comes out of the box. And SQL Azure databases, right now, there's nothing like a point-in-time backup available. So you would have to do a backup yourself. And there's a couple tools. You can use a copy as, which means you're just literally making a copy of the database, so you have two databases. Or you can do an import-export where you're exporting all of the data out, and then you can import it to an on-premise or to another SQL server, SQL Azure server, that type of concept. So there's a couple of different ways to go about it. And last, the data retention policy for diagnostics. This is an interesting one. Now that you're transferring all of this great diagnostics data to storage, what are you doing with it, right? You're going to accumulate fees as that data grows and grows and grows. And you may want to keep it there for some reason, or you may want to bring it on-premise, but you should really define that as early as you possibly can. And one of the great resources what we use is the Azure SCOM Management Pack for System Center Operations Manager. And not only will that monitor these diagnostic storage, WAD storage, but it will also groom it as well. It'll groom your event logs, your trace table, as well as the perf counter table. So you can say, hey, only keep the last hour of the raw data sitting in storage. And SCOM will actually do that for you, which is a great feature. So any questions on that section? All right, we're going to start looking. You have your app in production. We're going to start looking at troubleshooting this app. And I've not alluded to it, but actually just flat out said, one of the best resources you have right now is System Center Operations Manager. And there's a couple different feature sets that are great for things known as management packs. Does anybody have Operations Manager actually running in their production for on-premise right now? They use it for on-premise monitoring? So a couple people. So you'll be happy to know it works really well with Azure as well. And we'll do a little demo on that. So there's two management packs we recommend right now, the Windows Azure Management Pack and also the SQL Azure Management Pack. It's currently in CTP, but it's great for monitoring SQL, and we'll show that a little bit. You also have some of the functionality already built into SCOM, which is good. You have your availability monitoring, which you can monitor the URLs. You can monitor the service bus endpoints as well. If you're using service bus, you can monitor that through SCOM. And you can do that event monitoring and also perfmon monitoring that I didn't put down the slide. But both of those you can do through SCOM, just like it's an on-premise server. It'll read that WAD storage for the events or for perfmon, and it'll alert on that. And it'll also, if you want to bring it down for viewing through the SCOM console as well. This idea of trust but verify is really important. We talk about it in Microsoft IT, and it's that you're trusting that Azure is working as expected and that everything's working well, but you still need to verify it, right? You still need to verify that your NICs working as expected with NIC counters, your disks working as expected. So trust but verify. And they announced this week, really great feature, the GSM. And this is the outside-in monitoring, which is, I think, critical for Azure deployment. And that's to understand that end-user experience, right? So you can do this already with SCOM using the availability monitoring. So you can monitor from different points of presence, maybe in your own data center right now. And that's caught most of our issues with Azure so far. It catches most of our issues for any of our apps is that outside-in monitoring. So we highly recommend doing that as part of your troubleshooting and understanding what's going on with your system. So I want to take a minute and show some of these features in SCOM just to give you an idea. So we're not going to go through SCOM completely itself, but we're just going to highlight the what we've talked about here, which is the SQL Azure Management Pack and the Windows Azure Management Pack. So this is the SCOM console. So this is the kind of the home page for it, the monitoring tab. And a couple folders are added as part of these two management packs. So I'm going to go down and skip to the Windows Azure one. So you can see here we have the active alerts, naturally, if anything's going on. And we have deployment, state hosted service, role instance, role state. So this is great. So you can see the hosted service. I have a hosted service created. This maps to the Azure portal. That's Aramat TechEd. And under that, I have a deployment, which is that Aramat TechEd production deployment that I've created. So I can see that that's healthy. And then under that, I have roles. And I have my Hello TechEd site role. And you can see at the bottom some of the details. So it says I have two instances of it running right now. And this will discover all the time. And you can control how often it discovers. So if you scale out, it'll automatically pick that up and update itself. So now I have two instances. And you can go to the role instances and see, hey, both of those instances are healthy right now. And does a really good job of rolling up the health. So say if one instance goes down, well, the site's still running, right? That role is still healthy. It may be warning because one instance is down, but that can happen once in a while. So it rolls up that health into the role state so you can truly see, is your application healthy or not? Not only that, it also gives you some views into those performance counters. So this is what it's pulling from that WAD storage. So you can look at the number of requests per second across. This is for both of my apps. Looks like I had an interesting spike here, huh? Almost one request per second. Great. So this pulling from WAD storage, bringing it on-premise, and letting you view it in the SCOM console, just like it's an on-premise server. So anybody who's supporting it, have that same view that they're used to for understanding the performance of your Azure instances and the same alerting mechanism, too. If we look at SQL Azure is very similar in that we have a database engine where I gave it my database name, or I gave it my engine name, kind of my the subscription almost that I created. And then I have databases under that subscription. So here's a TechEd demo database. And it'll check to make sure, I haven't run out of space on that database and the performance is good on that database. And it also kind of almost creates counters for SQL. It's very interesting. It'll do things like if you want to see the network, if you want to see how much network is going in and out of the cloud from SQL, or in and out of SQL but still within the cloud, you can view that through SCOM as well. So I think it's very cool. It's a great job by the SQL team in developing this. This is CTP right now, and they're working on, this is a public CTP, but they're working on getting that ready for you. And if you're SCOM users and you have any feedback on this, feel free to share it. If any features that you want for any of these things, feel free to share. So now you can see you get in the SCOM console, and I want to kind of highlight the power of doing this all through SCOM. If we're looking at a hybrid app, I think this is the most interesting. So now in SCOM 2012, you have the ability to create dashboards. So here, I created this single-pane dashboard that shows outside in the response time of hitting my Azure site. It's showing the requests per second across both of my instances. It's showing the CPU across both of my instances. It's showing the number of connections or the database sessions that's happening on my SQL Azure database. And then I'm also showing some metrics with my on-premise CPU as well, so a server that my Azure application is connecting down to. Very powerful. One single pane of glass, you have a hybrid app, and you're viewing data across both private and the public cloud. So very cool. Management loves this stuff, believe me. So this is the way to monitor and to alert for enterprise Azure applications. So we kick. So any questions on SCOM and how that can be used to monitor and support your applications? All right. So I talked about this a little earlier, just the viewing events. So Yeah, you'll use SCOM. We recommend using SCOM to alert on events, but you sometimes just want to view it, right? You want to go on the event log and just view what's going on the server, right? And there's a couple different ways you can do it. You say you can just remote desktop into the instance if you want to and just view the event log there, nothing stopping you. Now, one thing that kind of is stopping you is you're going to have a single user login, so only one person can do that at a time. So that can be rough if you're working in a team of people trying to view the data. Now, you can query the WAD storage directly. You can do that with many tools. I showed how you can do that with Visual Studio. Can be slow, though. It's hard to search on different fields, say event description or maybe severity. So our recommendation is to send it to SQL. You can send it to SQL Azure, or you can send it to an on-premise SQL, excuse me. And you can build some very rich reports on top of that if you want. It's really easy to consume. The con is there's a little bit of development effort to do that, but if you have devs that are already working on Azure, it will be pretty easy for them to just bang out this, and they'll probably love you for it anyway so they can view those events, because that's, I don't know about you guys, but one problem we always have is, you know, making sure developers have everything they want from production. They're always complaining they don't have access to all the production data, right? So this is a good way to find that common ground between the two. So troubleshooting, I've talked about it. There's kind of no difference between your on-premise with regards to programs you can run. So if you, you know, enjoy using Netmon or the sysinternal suite for analyzing and troubleshooting, you can still do that, right? You can still TS into the role and copy those files up and run them. So no difference. You still, if it's a web role, you still have a website running on an app pool, right, that, you know, is a process, and you can use these tools to view what's going on. So yeah, Velociraptor again, is an intranet application on Azure still intranet? So this is something that we kind of had to grapple with. For both of our applications that Microsoft IT moved up, they were intranet applications. They were internal Microsoft users only, right? Now that we put it on Azure, it's not really internal anymore, is it? Yeah, there's a public URL for it, which is a little bit of a different paradigm shift, right? And we talk about now these public, quote-unquote, internal applications. So even if users are on-premise in Redmond behind the Redmond proxy, they still have to exit the Redmond proxy, go onto the internet to connect to this now internal application, quote-unquote, internal. All right, so when you're dealing with this, it's very important to start mapping those network paths, right? Really understanding where are your users coming from, what network layers are they going to be sitting on as they go, and what might lie between them and your app? Will the corporate proxy lie between them and your app? You know, it's a little bit different for internal apps. That's all. And tools, you know, the same tools you're used to, you can still use. Netmon's a great example. Netstat, those. A great example with this is we actually had an issue. It was last week now with our application. And we use Service Bus, so we have an on-premise component that connects to Service Bus and publishes some relay endpoints. And that connects to ACS to get a token to do that publishing. And we, although we had it configured not to use the proxy, all of a sudden it started to use the proxy again. And it could no longer get this ACS token because the proxy was disallowing it for whatever reason. Suddenly our endpoints went disappeared, right? So we caught this because we had this outside-in monitoring through SCOM that told us, hey, your site's not working anymore. We were also monitoring the endpoints themselves on Service Bus, said they weren't there. But it's an internal app, so our support teams weren't used to the fact that, hey, this corporate proxy now broke the app, right? This on-premise component that's part of the application, it just broke it, right? A little bit of a different way to look at things, that's all. So just want you to understand that this could happen, right, as you're moving applications or building applications on Azure. Just touch on SQL Azure. There's a lot of great sessions talking about what SQL Azure gives you. I want to key in that the things that we use in support specifically, you know, there's great DMVs for SQL Server that you might use to look at what's going on inside. Well, those are limited in SQL Azure, and that's just due to it being a shared service. So some of the scripts that you may run to understand, you know, what's going on resource contention-wise, what the blocking is going on, might have to be tweaked specifically for SQL Azure, so there's some resources online. One of the resources to use is just the SQL Azure portal as well. So you can get your query plans from that SQL Azure portal to understand what's going on there. One thing that you can't get right now is you can't get deadlock information. So say if you did have deadlocks in SQL Azure, what you're going to want to do is you will want to call Azure support, and Azure support will be able to provide that deadlock information to you. And hopefully if you instrumented your app the correct way, you would just get an event saying there's a deadlock, and you know, maybe it would trigger an alert or something. And if you get that, you would want to contact Azure support. SQL Azure, being a shared service, is very interesting, a little bit different than on-premise. So there's a throttling that can go on. So if you're using too many resources, it will actually kind of tell you to cool down, tone it down a little bit, right? Start throwing error messages to you, and that's where it's key to decode those error messages and alert on them so you know what's going on. And there's two different types. There's soft and hard. So soft throttling means maybe you're using too much CPU, just too much traffic. You're starting to affect other people on that SQL server, your databases. So it'll tell you to cool off a little bit. It'll say, please retry. And I'll show an example of this event. And you'll want to alert on that. And you'll want to look at the error code to see what it's telling you of why that's going on. So the hard throttling is if you are just maybe out of space. Something that's just, it's going to stop you. And hard means you're not going to be able to connect that SQL Azure database anymore. So it'll still come through as a error event that you're going to want to alert on, an exception that you're going to want to alert on. And a couple of Azure specific tools. You know, there's one thing I'm going to do a quick demo on, which is isolating nodes with PowerShell. So very cool, if you have issues on one specific instance, you can turn that instance off, meaning it won't send traffic to the instance anymore, but you can still use it and you can still troubleshoot it locally on that instance. Very cool. And there's also an Azure VM assistance tool, which will allow you to look at some of the logs that are on that are specific to Azure, so you can figure out if there's something going on with the Azure deployment as it's spun up. So let's take a quick peek at that. So come back to my Azure instance here. And first let me go back to the portal. I'll show you. So this is the instance we're looking at here, is this web in 0. So I'm going to turn that off, quote unquote, so the portal will no longer send any traffic to it. So to do this, you're going to want to use PowerShell. So you're going to run it as an admin. And you're going to add the snap-in. So it's Microsoft.Windows Azure.Service Runtime. That loads that. And then you can do a cool command called set role instance status, set to busy. And what that's going to do, it's going to turn it off to the load balancer. It thinks that, you know, something's going on with it. I'm not going to send traffic to it. But it's going to keep it up and available to you so you can specifically troubleshoot on that instance. And this will, it says in the text, it'll stay happening as long as this PowerShell window is up. So you just close that to keep it from going on. So I'm going to just let that go. And then we'll look at the portal in a little bit to see how it's reflected in the portal. So this tool, this Azure VM Assistant, it's on CodePlex, so it's publicly available. Just do a quick demo of this. And here you can get some information about the VM that's specific to Azure. So you can go, the launch pad will give you some info here. There's some specific Azure logs that deal with describing what happened as part of the role instance starting up. So we can look into that. We can see how it configured IIS. So here's a log from Azure where it went and configured IIS as part of the instance start. So really rich details. It's good for when you're calling Azure support that you have these available, and they can pull them down from the instances themselves anyway. But it's nice to also look through and try to figure out if you have problems, say, with your diagnostics file. It'll usually show up in these logs, so you can start to root through these logs. Let me go. So we got that. So you have the VM config. And this will look at the actual configuration file for that VM, and it'll also tell you some of the endpoints that are available and what are publicly available on that VM and the IPs. So here you can see kind of the configuration that you specified, but in an Azure way. as it was transformed, and you can understand what the endpoints, what is the load balancer public address. You want to see the IP of the actual load balancer that the instances is using. Now we go to VM health. It just gives you some details about the health of the VM itself. And then VM info will give you some details about uptime, about what it's running. I'm not going to go into what the different processes are. There's other sessions that do a great job of that. But it'll give you some info about how long it's been running, so about 14 hours. Again, the analyzing the configuration, you can see the load balancer, see the IPs of the individual instances. So yeah, if you have multiple instances, hundreds of instances, you can see that through here in a really easy way, a very easy way to consume that. And then you can see info about the deployment itself down here. So let's cross our fingers, see if it happened already. If I go back to the portal, all right, it's still in ready, so I'll let that keep going. So I'll give you an idea of just viewing some of the information that's maybe specific to Azure itself. So if you're trying to diagnose why maybe your role is continually starting up, it's not ever going to a ready state, that's a common thing. And these logs will tell you, as you start digging through them, it'll tell you, hey, what's going on with that role? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to kick over, and we're going to come back to this, because that'll go. Let me kick over. Wait, it's doing a refresh right now. Is it going to do it? Nah. So let me kick over to here, and we'll come back and take a look. So that's just a couple of the troubleshooting tools that are specific to Azure. Like I said, you can continue to use the ones you love and know already. Now let's close out talking about just the app versus the platform. So now you're in this running as a platform as a service. You got Microsoft stuff running. You got your own stuff running. Where's that line draw, right? And the last appearance of Business Cat, you know, if sites stay down, it'll be catastrophic. So the Azure platform, it's a little bit of a black box, right? But there's some clues to understand what's going on with it. Is this me or is it you? One of the great ways to understand what's going on is this service dashboard. So there's an Azure service dashboard that'll tell you the status in each data center of all the Azure components. There's an RSS feed that you can subscribe to. So if you have components in specific places, subscribe to that, get alerts when things are going on. One thing to know, though, is it may not apply to you, and it may not reflect you, right? So it might say there's an issue with SQL Azure in the North Central data center. You might have SQL Azure there. It might not mean you're impacted. It just means that there's an issue going on there. If you are seeing SQL Azure issues and you're seeing that, it's probably a good chance that you are being impacted by that. And also, the flip side is, you know, say you're having an issue, you know, something's just funny, but it's saying it's all green. Well, call Azure support, right? They just might not know right now that anybody's having an issue. There's a lot of great monitoring they do internal to it, but sometimes things just slip through and it's very specific to a user's deployment. So Azure support right now is free. So there's no reason not to call them when you're having an issue, and they'll definitely help you nail that down. So just understand that may apply to you, and it may not apply to you, and you may still be having an issue. The Azure Compute Roles, you know, so a lot of these issues I'm talking about here, it's after you've had the deployment up. If you're doing a deployment for the first time and you're seeing these kind of issues, it's probably your code, to be honest, right? And you should just start troubleshooting that as you go. But if your deployment, say, has been there for months, right, been weeks or months, and all of a sudden you're seeing an issue, that's where that line starts to be drawn, right? And it's very likely that something maybe is going on in the data center. So you might see role instances just never get to a ready state. They're constantly recycling. It's a good indicator something's going on. Maybe communication issues between role instances. Say you have a web server that's calling another web role that's hosting web services, and they just can't connect to each other, right? That's typically data center type thing. Feel free to call Azure support on that. SQL Azure clues. So we talked about, you know, there's throttling in SQL Azure. Well, some of the error codes will tell you call Azure support, basically, right? They'll say it's not you. You know, if you're seeing CPU issues, you know, a great example of this is, you know, once we saw we saw issues with our SQL Azure performance. However, our user load was non-existent at the time. It was during our off hours, right? Something's kind of fishy. Something smells there when you see that, right? So it's really a know your app type of thing. You know, if you're under heavy, if you're under your critical period, but all of a sudden it, you know, it's you're getting throttled, that's probably you. If it's in your off period, you're getting throttled. You know, it might be something that's worth calling into. Azure Cache. So we haven't talked about this too much, but there's Azure caching that's available. And sometimes maybe you get an error that says, you know, this is a temporary failure, retry later. That's usually platform related, and that's something that you would want to call Azure support for, seeing that you can't connect to your Azure cache, because that's typically where people will store their session state. So they'd store it in this Azure service known as Azure Cache. Service bus. Yeah, the endpoint clues. Maybe your endpoints disappear all of a sudden. If you actually go to the URL of your endpoint, there's an Atom feed that you can actually see. So we have three relays for our service bus. And if I go to the URL, you can actually see the three relays listed. And when they're not available, they're not listed there. So that's how we can use SCOM to monitor to make sure that the web page, that page contains that text, right? And if SCOM's alerting saying that, hey, that text isn't there, it means the service bus is down. Maybe it's us. We start investigating on our end. For example, we had that proxy issue. That was us, right? But if we can't find what's going on, it's worth calling Azure support. And even if you think it might be you and you still can't figure out, still call Azure support. It's free. They're going to help you out. You know, they see a lot of issues, so it's worth calling them. All right, you know, finally, just contacting Azure support. Like I said, I'll continue to say it's free right now. Call them. They're there to help you, right? Even if it's your own issue or if you suspect it's a platform issue. But when you call, just a couple things, tidbits, subscription ID, have that available, right? Just right away, you can just give it to them so you don't have to do this back and forth. The deployment ID, they're going to ask for that. It's something that you can find in the portal. And the technologies that you use. You know, what we do is we kind of, on a SharePoint site, we just have a blurb about our app that says what the app is, says what technologies we're using, how it's connected. And if ever we have to call Azure support, we just copy and paste that in. Right there, it's always ready, right? Because they end up always asking about that, right? You can look at the subscription. It's much easier for them just to ask and say, what are you guys using? Have that available already. You know, and the normal things, current problem, what are you seeing, and what are you suspecting, you know, and provide a shared email. So usually there's one point of contact, right? If you have a distribution list that a whole team is on, we've had issues where we'd call Azure support. We'd be doing it during Pacific's nighttime, like 2 a.m., right? And then that user would roll off, our support person would roll off, and Azure support stuck trying to contact us. They got no one to contact us, right? No way to contact. So it's good to give kind of a shared email on that. And with that, I'm actually going to kick back over. So as you can see here, ta-da, the role instance is now offline. So you can see it's labeled offline. It'll constantly say it's transitioning. But it's offline. You can still get into it. So if I go here, I'm still on this box. I can still troubleshoot it if I want to troubleshoot it. If I want to do one of these, go say to IIS. And go just drill into the site itself, browse to my site. I can still browse to my site on it, right? So I know I'm hitting this instance specifically, but end users aren't hitting this instance. I can troubleshoot what's going on. I'm not affecting anybody else. Maybe you want to scale it out, you know, say if you still want to have two up, you scale it out to three just for this time period. Really very useful trick. You know, if there's one takeaway you have from here, this is a great takeaway. And then this will stay, and then all I have to do, let me click the wrong one. So all I have to do here is close that PowerShell. And I won't make anybody wait for that, but once I close this PowerShell, it'll go back to a ready state, say if I fix a problem or something. So, and it's also good for if you want to call Azure support, same thing, put it in that state, call Azure support, say, hey, this instance is having an issue, then they can look at that. You're not affecting your users, but you didn't have to blow away that instance, right? So, you can repro. You don't have to try to repro later on. So with that, that is the end. There's some related content. Session earlier today, some of you may have attended the Monitoring and Managing in Windows Azure, went over the new portal. A talk on the hybrids rule. And in this talk, Yusuf highlights our two applications in Microsoft IT, their architecture and how they work. And then a great talk just on the 2012 Operations Manager. You know, we plug that a lot here because it's our preferred way of using it. So if you are not familiar with it, check out some of the Ops Manager talks. They're great too. So with that, I'm going to first ask, please fill out the feedback, good or bad. Let me know how I did. Let me know what worked for you, what didn't work. And is there any questions? Anybody got any questions, any real-world examples that they have? That's fine, too. Well, thanks for coming. Maybe I'll run into you at this party if you guys are going to the party afterwards. And thanks for coming to Tech Ed, too. I hope you had a great time at Tech Ed. Remember, you can always view all the Tech Ed sessions for 1 year. So you can come back, view this again, view some of these other related contents, because obviously you're not making to them live at this point. So thanks, everybody.